Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Sensational month of April continues, and yes, it's finally here. The hours, the minutes, the seconds, they tick away. Thursday night, NFL draft. Will it be a long wait for you, Jaguar fans, selecting at 17? Could they possibly move up? You're going to give 2-for-1. You're going to give up future picks to move up all the way into that top 10 to perhaps get a wide receiver. Some are speculating that that is the case. After getting back from the press conference on Thursday, listening to general manager Trent Baalke, head coach Doug Peterson, I'm convinced that's not what is going to happen. Now, could they slide up a few spots to get a cornerback? Yeah, I do. I absolutely think that is in play. And, you know, I look at a couple of these teams like Denver and certainly Indianapolis. The Colts right now should scare you because it just feels like every mock draft that I read, and there's so many of them, the Colts are getting a guy that Jacksonville, you have to believe, wants. I don't know if they want them. It's my guess that they want them. I don't know if Trent Baalke tipped his hand either way, on Thursday, that it's a corner, that it's a wide receiver, that it could be really something else. And if it's not one of those two, what else could it possibly be? My guess, an edge rusher, right? I mean, I go offensive line. I've yelled about that forever, but I don't think that's going to be the move that the Jaguars make, considering the offseason moves has put together that offensive line. And that really does include the depth with that offensive line. I mean, it feels like that position, believe it or not, is pretty much set, although you can never have too many offensive linemen. If they elect to go that way and draft one in the first, second, third round, I'd be very excited about it. Man, you got to protect your franchise. You got to do that with Trevor Lawrence, and certainly we'll have much more on that this week, and that does include tonight. Coming up in less than 1 hour, Eric Edholm is going to join us. NFL.com. I go way back with Eric from his days. He's actually a Boston guy. And he took the pilgrimage, as I did, leaving Boston, going to the great Florida State. He chose Missouri. So he went way out, but he still went where it was cold, right? If you're going to travel across, you know, way across the country, don't you want to go someplace that it's warm? Apparently that was not the deciding factor for Eric. But anyway, does an outstanding job with NFL.com. He's going to join us here to talk much more about the Jaguars. And, you know, there's all sorts of good trade stuff that's really heating up. And we saw a deal today, not a blockbuster one, but it should be a reminder to each and every one of us. The Zach Wilson trade to Denver. My goodness, they included a 2024 seventh round pick, did the Broncos. And the Jets, all they get back for it is a sixth rounder. So they just basically handed away Zach Wilson, just like the Patriots basically just handed away Mac Jones to the Jaguars, with all of the emphasis on easily the top three picks in this year's draft. Could be four, and it could end up being, you know, five quarterbacks who go before the Jaguars select at 17. The more, the better. Obviously, that means a position player, a non-quarterback that you have evaluated is still there on your board if you do have five QBs who go. And right now in Las Vegas, it's sitting at 4.5. Yeah, you can bet on positions in Las Vegas and perhaps other places when it comes to this year's draft class. 4.5, very difficult bet. I happen to think that either Michael Penix or Bo Nix is going to be the fifth quarterback selected in the first round. We shall see. Interesting enough, Michael Penix is one of the few players that was highlighted by Albert Breer that clubs across the NFL have flagged because of injury-type scenarios. Remember, all doctors are going to have different grades on injuries, even though there is somewhat of a stereotype, I guess, and I'm not going to start getting into medicine and rehabilitation and how long it takes to for bones to heal and ligaments to heal and things along those lines. But the big deal, as far as I'm concerned, is when it comes to this, how your doctor and his recommendation comes into play. I say it all the time because it was so important to this franchise. But I'll never forget with Dan Hicken, and that year when they selected Jalen Ramsey, they did his press conference in the Jaguars locker room. Okay, this was long before the Miller Electric Center. You know, there were times, you know, that old building didn't really have, unfortunately, a great area for the media. During the Coughlin days, it used to be way off in the bowels, and then that got changed at the end of Doug Marrone when Urban Meyer came in. I mean, he wanted to change absolutely everything, and he did. All of a sudden, you walked in there, that was your media entrance, and there was a huge concrete wall that was up. So I don't know exactly what was put on the other side, but even when that facility was, you know, had a facelift and was slightly new, it never really had a great area. So after Jalen was selected, he actually did his interview right in the old locker room, which is only used now on game days. For those of you who are not aware, they live in the Miller Electric Center, okay? They practice there. We go there weekdays to watch him practice. We go there after practice to do interviews, and they have an outstanding new facility where, you know, last week Aloakon and Trevor spoke on Tuesday, and of course Thursday you had Bulky and Peterson. This is top of the, you know, it's top best that you'll find professionally or collegiately speaking as far as the facility. But after the Jalen convo, Hicken and I cornered Dave Caldwell, and that was when I was doing the show with Frank and with Jessica Blaylock, and I came back and I was like, there's no way they're taking Miles Jack. I go, this is no way. And what had happened is some tomfoolery, whatever you want to call it, Dave Caldwell had me believing there's no way that's going to be their pick. Obviously, and you had the significant injury for Miles Jack when he was at UCLA. He was cleared by the Jaguar team officials. He got a non-flag. He was good to go by Dr. Kaplan. And, you know, I really have a lot of respect for Dr. Kaplan. I have so much respect for him, I would never ask him about an individual player, even though we have a relationship that he did surgery on several of my friends, did surgery on my daughter, my oldest daughter. I think that would be wrong. Because medically speaking, that's his gig, right? That's his profession. He's so good at it. Even if we are in an off-the-record type situation, I just think it would be below myself to go up and ask about a current player or even a prospect. So I never have, and I never would, but I was totally fooled. Anyway, point is, there could have been other teams that flagged Miles Jack. There could have been several teams that said, uh-uh, the way that our doctors looked at him, we think that this injury is going to happen again. Or we think that this is just one hit or one play away from being, you know, complete damage and then a setback for a year or maybe even a longer period than that. Albert Breer, oh, for what it's worth, also had Brian Thomas Jr. on this list. I don't think anyone on this radio station can do a show without mentioning the name Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver, LSU, projected to be the fourth wide receiver to go. You know about the top three. He's had a shoulder situation. Now, he did go on to say it was a minimal risk, but it still is one. I mean, do you want to go out and bring in a guy if there's a risk for injury? And, man, injuries happen all the time. Look at the first-round draft pick a year ago. They weren't even in pads over at the Miller Electric Center, and all of a sudden we heard that Anton Harrison has a shoulder. I mean, they were barely hitting, and all of a sudden, that began in camp for him. And, you know, look at the wide receivers last year. They were so healthy in 2022. I think that's probably one of the greater untold stories. Maybe I shouldn't say untold because we discussed it, but that may be the biggest difference
And we could talk about the fact that this team couldn't run the ball, or this team turned the ball over too much, or this team was too predictable, and you can complain about their play calling, or whatever it is that you want to do. The fact is, this team was hurt in 2023. They were not in 2022. And two guys that Trent Baalke drafted last year, albeit a fourth rounder and a seventh rounder, basically redshirted. If you look at Ventrell Miller and you look at Cooper Hodges, you never got a sniff out of either one of those two. They were damaged goods immediately once things got underway. So anyway, interesting report. Albert Breer, as we know, is very well connected. He listed quite a few guys on here. Michael Penix Jr., one of them. That's why I brought up this. The teammate of Brian Thomas Jr., Malik Nabers with a shoulder. He's on it. Ladd McConkey. Can you draft the guy whose name is Ladd? I mean, come on. I'd have a real problem with that. And Georgia, don't tell me he's a do-it-all guy with quick feet. For crying out loud, his parents named him Ladd. Okay, let's move on. Yeah, give me a wide receiver by the name of Brian, or give me one by the name of Malik. Okay, Ladd. I mean, that is just so south, right? Where I came from, never once in the history of the great state of Massachusetts has anyone ever been called Ladd, all right? But anyway, he's on the list with a back and an ankle. We shall see. So plenty to do as far as the draft, and again, we'll really hammer into that coming up at 7 o'clock tonight with Eric Edholm, who's going to join us from NFL.com. One other nugget that I find very interesting is John Lynch today had kind of his pre-draft conversation with the local media in San Francisco, very similar to Baalke here with Peterson last Thursday. And he went on to say everything that you would expect him to say about Brandon Ayuk. They've had good talks, right? Ayuk has not requested a trade. He doesn't see that a trade could happen. They're talking about a contract extension. He wants to be a member of the San Francisco 49ers. It goes on and on and on and on and on. And you know what? Is it believable? Perhaps. Is it a massive smokescreen just to try to draw even a little bit more interest? If you make a trade for Brandon Ayuk, it's going to have to include a long-term contract extension. And I found that a little bit intriguing earlier today, the very latest, because there's still a lot of people out there who believe that that is the direction that Jacksonville is going to go. To me, the conversation becomes, what's the asking price? What are you going to give up? Would you give up a first rounder? Would you give up a second rounder? Would you give up the 48th pick and a fifth rounder? Is that enough to get him? I mean, that was basically what it took to get Brian Burns going from Carolina to New York. I understand this is a different position. I mean, I'm from the school of a pass rush defensive end used to be worth a heck of a lot more than a wide receiver. But doesn't it feel like there are certain positions in today's NFL where that has changed? And whether it was Randy Mueller, whether it was, help me out here, Eric Ross. I'm trying to think of some other former NFL personnel that we've had on our program lately where I've tried to, and I was going to ask Baalke this, but I just kind of got the understanding it would be wasted breath, that Baalke wasn't going to give me the answer. And I don't know if any general manager would give you the answer, but I find myself intrigued about positions. Okay, you used to not draft a guard high. You used to not draft a tight end high. You used to not draft a safety high, right? It used to be quarterback, left tackle, defensive end, corner. And you could really have an argument about 2, 3, and 4. There would be those that would tell you a pass rush defensive end is more important than a left tackle. There would be others that say, no way, you can't win in this league without a great left tackle. It feels like the cornerback position is not as important today as it once was. And I'll credit John Osher, conversation I had with him a few years ago, saying, well, teams can elect not to throw to the great corner. So he shuts down half the field. So be it. Throw to your second. Throw to your third wide receiver. A lot of teams don't even have their corner on your top wide receiver. They don't shadow guys, run with them. They take one side of the field. The other corner takes the other side of the field. And there are times where you can double team the best player, right? And your cornerback actually gets your number two wide receiver, depending on how your scheme is. But I really kind of believe that we've seen the DB position drop a little bit. And on top of that, it feels like all of a sudden wide receivers, the expression, they grow on trees. You can always find a wide receiver, right? Feels like no, more and more. Even though, unfortunately, that one position, you have to deal with so much nonsense because I guess this is the point from the time that they're really still in the playpen. They're just massive divas. The really good ones are, basically unlike any other position in the NFL. You don't hear about a lot of divas on the offensive line. You don't hear about a lot of divas on the defensive line. Although the Parsons situation coming out of Dallas is starting to be interesting. Apparently, he's ruffled a lot of feathers there. And a lot of it is that he's become his own media entrepreneur, if you will, with his podcast. I guess he's going to be doing something big coming up on draft night. Hey, I love it. The more, the better. But, I mean, the Jerry Joneses of the world, the old school, are like, oh, my God, I just wanted to get after the quarterback. He's so talented. But it's very rare to hear that you have divas, I think, at other positions that aren't named wide receiver. But I believe that's moved up. I believe right tackle is more important now than it once was, albeit in this franchise. You old school fans certainly do remember that it was Leon Searcy who actually had the blind sign for Mark Brunell because he was a left-handed quarterback. It wasn't the Hall of Famer, Tony Boselli. Just my way of thinking with the way that these... So again, I was considering asking, and but I didn't think that Bulky would say, oh, you know what? Here's my list. It's quarterback, left tackle, pass rush end, wide receiver, right tackle... I just didn't believe that that would happen, okay? And again, I don't think any general manager would. And I don't know if there's a book on it. You know, it's one of those unwritten rules or deals that you hear, but you don't know. And I think it's changed a little bit in the league. It makes you wonder, what's the next thing that's going to change? Fullbacks are gone. In today's NFL, I find it very surprising that you can't find a long snapper or a deep snapper who also is one of your 8 or 9 offensive linemen. You notice that all 32 snappers in the league, that's all they do. Well, when you have rosters after your Sunday scratches that are so incredibly important, and you're snatching up a roster spot for a guy who can only snap, is it too hard to ask, well, can he also, in a pinch, be a backup center, a backup guard? Okay, a lot of these deep snappers weigh, what, 240, 250 pounds? I don't know. I'm just wondering if maybe that's next. I mean, a couple teams still run tight ends, but fullbacks, but for the most part, that has been totally eliminated in the NFL. All right. When we come back, Millen Electric, the good folks over there, of course, they bring us our 6:30 segment each and every Monday night. I do want to spend a couple of moments talking about Florida State Spring Day. A lot of good, some concerns. The book on DJU, kind of what I expected. Started off incredibly slow. He's got a cannon for an arm. Accuracy is a concern, but the biggest problem there, wide receivers not being able to get open and wide receivers dropping the football. I think their backs are outstanding. I think the offensive line is good enough. I think their defense is not going to miss a beat. And I say that in an encouraging way. I say that in a glass half full type of approach. My biggest concern is obviously linebacker. Okay. And those two may not even get drafted. Florida State could have 11, 12 players drafted, and you may not have Kalen DeLoach and Tatum Bethune end up getting selected. They were so important to that defense. They played like every play defensively for FSU a year ago, but it just feels like that pass rush with Peyton and Jones Jr. could be as good as it was last year, and obviously that included Verse. Fisk in the middle. You look at a guy like Darryl Jackson Jr. He's at a monster camp, and there's some younger guys doing some good things. You lose three corners to the NFL draft. It looks as though right now the cornerbacks are where you would expect them to be. So it's not perfect. It isn't. But, man, they need a wide receiver. They do. And the guy that really did the best throughout camp left with an injury in Malik Benson. He made a phenomenal grab down the sideline from DJU with really good coverage by Fentrell Cypress. But unfortunately, a bit later on, he went to the locker room. So I want to spend a couple of minutes on that. As a matter of fact, there's been a transaction. Someone who's just left Florida State and announced that they're heading to the transfer portal. I'll let you keep it here to find out who that was coming up in just a little bit. So we'll come back. We'll do that. And, of course, then we will hammer back to the NFL draft. Much more on the Jaguars. That's going to include Eric Edholm, who's going to join us from NFL.com. All right, opening comments tonight and every night brought to you by Schmunez Vision. Been a big fan of Schmunez Vision, really, since I returned in 2006. And that includes Dr. Neil Schmunez, who I've known for a period of decades, really. We're talking about 37 years worth of experience when you talk about this family organization. And, you know, I would notice today that my contacts, I wear the daily ones. I got to go back in about 3 weeks to a month for my latest, just a normal checkup, right? Probably a prescription, maybe a change. We'll see. Well, I did that 8.5 years ago. And he's like, listen, you need surgery now. You got a problem. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm fine. Everything's good. I see fine. He's like, you got a serious issue. Very next morning, he performs surgery. So this is much more than just going in and getting an update for contacts or glasses. If you're getting older, which we all are, and you sense that maybe there is a problem, maybe there's a cataract issue, maybe you get blurriness later in the night, you're struggling when you read, and then all of a sudden you go to look at the TV and you can't see it, or vice versa. You're watching TV, then all of a sudden your kid asks you to help him with your homework and you can't even read it. I mean, all these issues are common. Get help. Get yourself the best in the business. Check them out online. Go to Schmunez Vision. That is Schmunez Vision Care, you can see. All right, let's go. Monday edition, huge week, draft week in Jacksonville. We are going to talk about that throughout each and every day this entire week, and we'll continue with that right here as we get moving on a Monday with J.J. LaSelva. My name is Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, with you tonight till 8 o'clock. Rick Ballew, J.J. LaSelva. We have a bit coming up here on Scotty Scheffler in just a couple of minutes. We'll do that, and then we'll get back to the Jaguars draft. That is beginning at 7 o'clock, so looking forward to doing that. You see the fight, Ryan Garcia? I know you're a big fight guy.
I did.
6-1 underdog. Knocked down Haney three times. Apparently the belt doesn't change because he weighed in, 3.2 pounds over the 140 limit.
And he had a beer at the weigh-in. I guess he knew he was not going to make weight, so he made a huge show of it. And, my only problem is I don't think he downed the entire beer.
What?
Yeah.
What's he, a sorority guy? I was going to say, is his name Ladd? But we know that anyone by the name of Ladd.
By the way,
they can drink.
Name is Andrew. I had to look that
stay
up.
Stay with Andrew.
Yeah,
Ladd's
I don't know
cute.
Came up with the dog name.
That's kind of like being named like Scooter or like Spitfire. I mean, there becomes an age, let's go with 6, where you get away from a name like Ladd, right? You grow up from it. Agree?
I can't agree, Matt, because I go by JJ, so no.
Yeah, but JJ's got a little bit of a little bit of swagger to it.
I did try to go. I tried to become John when I moved to Jacksonville and it started attending college, but it wasn't right. My professors called it, but the students, they picked up quickly that wasn't quite my name, and then word spread. I'm still JJ. I tried to be a new person, but it just, no. Yeah, I'm trying to Wikipedia this. There is no, I don't know where Ladd came from. Usually there's like a entry. Oh, he, his little sister, this is all she could say when she was a child, so it stuck, or there's nothing like that.
He became a dog, right? I mean, lad is big when you're a puppy, but you grow out of that name. And anyway,
I know it's British.
And it's Irish as well. I mean, lads, right? Lassies, lads. Yeah.
McConkie, very Irish.
Mm-hmm. Someone's like, that's totally Boston. I'm like, bro, you could not grow up on the streets of Boston once you were old enough to fight and still go by the name of Lad. They would have gone after you, okay? Would you say his name was Andrew?
Andy.
Go to Andrew. Go to Andy. Go to Drew. I mean, with the name Lad, you're just asking to get punched. You really are.
Certainly bullied.
Yes. Now, maybe he fought them all, and he's a tough guy, and he's going to go in the NFL draft.
Exactly.
Right?
Sometimes people need to be bullied.
So this guy drank, like, the entire time.
Well, allegedly.
Yeah, I mean, he's a boxer, and he said it. I believe him.
The whole build-up to this fight, he was like, everyone was questioning his mental health, and, you know, he'd been tweeting a lot of stuff about, Epstein Island type stuff and about elites in the country and all this stuff. And people were like, is he okay? Like, what happened to him? So people thought he was on coke or booze or whatever. And so he wins the fight. And then, like you said, after the fight, he tells all the media that I drank and smoked every day during training camp.
Yeah.
Which I don't believe, but
he doesn't get the belt because he came in at 3.2 pounds over the 140 weight limit for the super lightweight title.
Which that won't bother him. I mean, now he was already a huge name with the youngins, but now all of boxing knows him. He's not the face of boxing, but he's damn well close now. He was already popular with, like, younger girls because of Instagram, and he's a good-looking guy or whatever, but he proved himself in the ring on Saturday night. I did not see that coming.
Tonight's show brought to you by Miller Electric Company. I've already mentioned the Miller Electric Center a couple of times because it's an unbelievable facility. But let me spell it out for you. If you're a current individual who is unhappy with what is going on as an electrician, you think you're underpaid, you think you don't have good bonuses or whatever it may be, insurance, any of that, just check them out online. Go to the MillerElectricCompany.com or look for Miller Careers. And everywhere you look, there's Miller Electric. And that is going to continue, especially with all of the expected building that is going to happen downtown. And not even downtown. No matter where you drive now, you see that more and more work is being done. The world needs good electricians. Check them out. Go to MillerElectricCompany.com or go to Miller Careers. All right, let me give you a few minutes on Florida State and what they did on Saturday. I liked it. I did. There are times when you watch these kind of made for the fans event, situational drills, some 11-on-11, some individual drills, then a 15-minute quarter, a 10-minute quarter. Then they brought in Travis Miner and Tommy Pauly and Corey Simon and Peter Warrick to call plays, kind of mix it up and have a little bit of fun repping the 99 national championship team, four stars of that team. But for me, it all came down to DJU. And, if he's coachable, that's – and Mike Norvell said he is, in fact, coachable. If he is – if he's willing to learn, okay, I think there's a chance here that he's better than what we expect. He is a massive human being, okay? I mean, he is legitimately all of 6'4" and 255-plus pounds. And he didn't do a lot of things when it came to, obviously, running the football. He had a blue jersey on. They weren't going to ask him to do any of that. But when it comes to DJ Uiagalelei, no one questions his potential, especially with his arm strength. It's the little things, right? It's accuracy. And if you look at what he did last year at Oregon State, where he went clearly across the country from Clemson, had to learn a totally new offense, his completion percentage was 57.1. Yesterday, he was 13 of 29. He started out by missing seven out of his first nine. I should say Saturday, not yesterday. Now, there were some drops, but there was also a batted down ball, almost a pick by DJ Lundy, almost a pick by Marvin Jones Jr. It wasn't perfect. He got better as the day went along. A nice 40-plus reception by Darian Williams, Williamson. The pass I talked about before the break, the 27-yarder to Malik Benson down the sideline was about as good as you'll find. Okay, hit Kentron Portier on a nice little down and out. And by the way, message to Portier. If you're going to wear the number one, do more than show up. Show out, okay? You're a fifth-year guy there who's done nothing. Nothing. If you are going to put number one on your body, show out. Hang on to the ball. You had a crystal clear drop, and that's been the case for you throughout camp. So I understand you want to feed your ego, and I understand, hey, you know, you make plays, man, I'll be your biggest fan. But you just put number one on your body. Feel free to make a play. DJ Uiagalelei, that is his biggest problem. He's not accurate. It's some of the short stuff he misses. Now, I thought the defense was ahead of the offense. I didn't think the wide receivers were showing separation against these defensive backs. And I do believe it's a very good defensive back class. We saw Greedy Vance announce his transfer 2 weeks ago. As a matter of fact, he announced today he's going to Southern Cal. He's going to play his football his senior year over at the University of Southern California. Florida State as well today came in about an hour and a half ago. Vandarius Jacobs, the four-star, gone. He was the leading receiver yesterday. Two receptions, 61 yards, a touchdown. Last year, the former four-star is a freshman. Three receptions, 60 yards, and a touchdown. That is a thick group as far as bodies at wide receiver. But no one has really stepped up not named Malik Benson. And he got rolled up upon. So he left. Hopefully it's just a precaution. You got a lot of downtime. I haven't heard anything overly significant. You know, he walked off, went into the tent, then was carted to the locker room. We'll see. Ja'Kai Douglas, they like. You know, he's an undersized wide receiver, another fifth-year guy. But to me, that is the biggest concern right now, outside of the accuracy of DJU. That is, who's going to step up as the wide receiver? My guess is that Malik Benson and Ja'Kai Douglas will be two starting wide receivers. That third starting wide receiver, you tell me. Hakeem Williams hasn't flashed. Destin Hill, injured. These fifth-year seniors, I'm not going to waste airtime on Deuce Spawn after the way he quit against Georgia and fumbled on that kick return. I kind of hope he hits the transfer portal. This gave you my opinion on Portier. Williamson, inconsistent. Inconsistent. I mean, these are fifth-year guys. If you're not going to produce, hit the bricks and bring in someone else who can play. I really like their backfield. I do, and I'm a huge Toa Fili guy, but I tell you what, Roydell Williams, another Alabama guy, look really good. Keziah Holmes, look really good. Cam Davis, the freshman, unfortunately did not play. He's injured. I wanted to see him, but that's life. Jalen Lucas, maybe the smallest football player I've ever seen. He literally hides behind the line of scrimmage, and he's the fastest player on this team. You got to find ways to get him the ball. And I want to believe that they will. So overall, I thought it was a really good day for FSU. The defense is better than I expected, considering you look at all the players that they lost. They're going to have three guys drafted off the defensive line. They lost two linebackers. They lost two corners and a safety. They look good. They're ahead of the offense. But now you got 4 months. You hope that the leadership of DJU grabbing these wide receivers, that has to work. I mean, day in, day out, they have to work together. There isn't consistency there, and there's mistakes being made there by the quarterback, and there's mistakes there being made by the wide receivers. So This isn't like Florida State 3 or 4 years ago where they didn't have any guys. They have guys. These are talented players. These are 4-star, 5-star players. Okay? Find out who's going to take that next step and then have that happen. We'll see what does take place. All right. You want to comment on that? Absolutely. 641-1010. That is on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I want to spend a couple of minutes on Scottie Scheffler because he deserves the recognition. What he is doing is absolutely sick. And I mean that in a great way. So a little bit on Scottie Scheffler as well. We're about 20 minutes away from Eric Edholm, the very latest on the Jaguars and the NFL draft. Eric is with NFL.com. He will join us right at 7 o'clock.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
All right, with you tonight till 8 o'clock. We're about 15 minutes away. The very latest on the Jaguars draft. We'll be joined by Eric Edholm of NFL.com. Of course, this week, a lot of trade rumors moving up, moving down. Solid players who could be dangled and moved. Come Thursday night, the Jags sit right in the middle of it all, selection number 17. So we'll get there momentarily. But, man, the Scottie Scheffler situation just continues. The dominance is unlike anything we've seen in really years, ever since Tiger Woods. And for starters, I was shocked that he played this weekend in Hilton Head because of the way the media created last week's story about the fact that his wife could have a baby at any moment as he donned his second green jacket. Let's bring in our friend Rick Shoemaker. Always love to talk PGA Tour and golf overall with Rick. Of course, he is the owner and operator over at Cimarron Golf Club on 210. Rick, good to have you back.
No, fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Man, it's always a lot of fun. Took an off day on Tuesday, went out there and played some golf with some buddies, and just had an outstanding time at Cimarron.
Well, thank you. No, again, weather was perfect, so it's hard not to have a great day at a golf course, right?
Yeah.
And I always tell people it could have been one stroke worse, so enjoy it.
No doubt. Hey, we'll get to Scottie Scheffler in a minute, but this 15-year-old Miles Russell, a 566 yesterday, he had a stretch of 7 birdies during 10 holes at the Korn Ferry Tour. You know, I think a lot of our listeners, we all played sports competitively. Hockey and baseball were my best sports as a young kid. But they were team sports, and there were others that you could pick up or could pick you up. You play golf competitively. What do you think it's like right now to have this much success this early, only being 15 years of age, if you're Miles Russell?
Well, first of all, I think it's daunting, but I think he's handling it well. And I think, you know, the last 10 years where golf has gone and sports in general for young kids, availability of instruction and coaching to them and the opportunities are phenomenal. So they're well beyond their years. I think for him, I'll say this though. I think he's going to hit a bump in the road. He's 15. And what happens to a lot of these young players is they get to a point and they're going to hit a ceiling in the form of just getting through 1 year of a struggle. And I just hope he doesn't change his swing. That's the biggest thing you see with young golfers, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to say, hey, if you do this, you can be just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, he's 15 years old, and he made a cut of the Korn Ferry. To me, he doesn't need to change anything.
Right.
I mean, that kind of talent to do what he's doing at his age is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I wonder about, you know, those who are going to hang on now and try to give advice because it's a one-man situation. And you know, the greatest that we've ever seen, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Ohio State, Tiger, Stanford, Scottie Scheffler, Texas, they went to school. We saw Nick Dunlap win a few months ago at Alabama, went from being an amateur to a pro immediately, you know, after the fact. But these kids, they go on and they play collegiately. I know it's a little young to talk about because I believe he's only a sophomore in high school, but I mean, that's a huge decision among so many other things that this man is going to have to, or a young man is going to have to decide with the guidance of his family over the next several years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was looking back at some players at youngest, and it's actually interesting when you Google, you know, what comes up is Michelle Wee.
Yes, yes.
Think about the spotlight that was on her for 14, 15, and 16.
Mm-hmm.
And not that she did not have a lack of success as a career. but did it turn out what everybody expected? Question mark, right?
Yeah.
So you look at those types of examples, and again, you just hope he first enjoys life and recognizes that he's going to have plenty of time. Look at Scottie Scheffler, and I know we're going to talk about him, but look what his background was.
Yeah.
He did everything you possibly can at the amateur level, the Walker Cups, college, but yet still went to the Corn Ferry Tour. And it was not from, I guess he graduated in 18, and it wasn't until 21 that he was on the tour and won. So there's a gap there that you hope they understand. They don't need to do it at 17, 18, 19, and that to enjoy life, get that college experience. The PGA Tour is introduced the PGA Tour. I think they call it what, PGA Tour University. I think these players get ranked and get their cards. So there's a lot of different avenues for him to go to still achieve, I'm sure, what his goal is. And just be better.
Rick Shoemaker, our guest, joins Rick Ballew whenever we talk about something that is happening in the world of golf, whether it be the PGA Tour, a major, or in this case, the Corn Ferry. All right, it wrapped up this morning because of faulty weather in on Hilton Head, but Scottie Scheffler wraps up his round with a 68, so he wins another $3.6 million, man. He's won $16 million, Rick, in the last 44 days.
Yeah, I mean, to say the least, right? I mean, he's on a roll. And I was looking at that, too. I think he's already 10th in official earnings in career.
Mm-hmm.
he's, what, 10 more years to go. Just phenomenal what he's doing. Just the calm demeanor is what surprised me. You don't see stress in him. You just see someone, I think, who has found their place in life, right? There's such contentment, such joy, but obviously the fire that is allowing him just to dominate,
mm-hmm.
just flat out dominate when you look at his stats and what's happening out there with the best of the best in the world. I was looking at his stats. I think he's, top 10 finishes are 52 out of 121 so far of tournaments he's played. And you start ranking that. And I was looking at the Jacks and the Tigers records and Greg Norman, and Tiger's numbers are cutting edge right now.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it's just a microcosmic of what those players did in 300, 400, 500 starts, but what he's doing has been unmatched, and it just doesn't seem like anybody's challenging him right now.
You know, I love dynasties. Whether it was growing up watching the Steelers or then the 49ers, and even recently with Georgia and, the Chiefs just won again, and even down the road, Tampa Bay, the Lightning, 4 and 5 years ago, won consecutive cups. I love that, and I love what Tiger did. But, I mean, is this healthy right now for the PGA Tour to have Scottie Scheffler, regardless of what the event is? He's won four of his last five. The only one he didn't win, he missed a putt to force a playoff. Is this good or bad for the PGA Tour?
Oh, I think it's extremely healthy. I think, again, we talked about a couple of radio shows ago with Liv and what that's done. There's a little hiccup in the viewership, a little bit, not a lot, but some. I think this is very healthy. It gives them a storyline. It gives everyone something to watch for, just like quarter on the LPGA. People are tuning in. I think people are going to be ecstatic. I think they're interested to see if Scotty takes 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever he's going to take through the greatest gift of all coming for him, which is his family, what he does when he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. It's just healthy for the game. And, I was saying it would be interesting to see who challenges him, Rick, because I always said, Tiger had an edge to him, and there was just enough edge that I would say to some of my buddies sometimes, if I was top 10 in the world, I would be edgy with Tiger. I'd be like, no, I'm going to beat him. I can't say it on air, right? But I'm going to beat him, right? I'm number 8 in the world. I'm going out there to beat him. But Scotty, the challenge is, you look at Scotty, everything you hear and see, I don't know him personally, but he's such a great guy and a gentleman, and he doesn't seem to carry that edge, right? So it's hard to say, I want to go out and just beat that guy, because you don't like him, right? There's nothing not to like about him.
Yeah. When you become this successful and this famous, your friends change. This isn't the case for Scheffler. We heard about it last week. He flew in four of his buddies, and they stayed in his house that he rented out at Augusta. And, was instead of rubbing elbows with some of the most important people in the sport, he's like, yeah, whatever, I'll shake their hand. But I'm going back to my boys, and it's almost refreshing. It feels like, yeah, I've been covering this for 32 years. You see how these relationships grow when you get with other famous people, but it feels like he's really grounded in his back with his homeboys, if you will.
No, and look, that's his formula too, right? And so you hope he never does lose that, because his ability to stay in his surroundings and that comfort level is allowing him to perform at this level. And so long as that stays, it's a great formula. Simplicity, confidence, and just overall happiness. Right?
Yeah, no doubt. All right, last one for you. As great as he is, he's won the Masters twice. He still hasn't won the PGA Championship or either Open. Is it too early to mention Grand Slam for Scottie Scheffler?
No, not at all. I think the nuance, unfortunately or fortunately, right, you've got a blessing coming, is the timing. So I think when is Valhalla? What's that, third week in May?
Yes.
So, and I'm not sure what his wife's due date is, but that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If it's prolonged and she has the baby, you know, let's go with May 7th. I don't know what her date is. And it's only 12 days away from the PGA Championship, that could pose a hurdle. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say anything he can't overcome with what we've seen out of him. But I do think that delivery day, his mentality, everything's healthy, is going to allow him then to lead and go continue what he's doing. So that, to me, is the only thing that's going to stop him from being the favorite and maybe being a Grand Slam winner.
All right, Rick, give us the latest over at Cimarron Golf, located right there on 210. And that includes, please, for our listeners, the Loyalty Club program.
No, things are fantastic. Again, we couldn't ask for a better spring season. As you mentioned, you played out here. Things are as green as green. We're loving it. The heat's coming up on us. You know, that'll pose a transition. Every golf course here, we'll go through transition sometime mid-May to June. So we're bracing for that. We've got some more projects coming up this summer to continue improvements, but people are enjoying it. I mean, look at this weather. My gosh, tomorrow, if everybody doesn't go play golf tomorrow, even nine holes, shame on you. Tomorrow's going to be probably our last incredible day before summer shines down on us and blisters us a little bit. So get out there and enjoy it. We've got everything from the practice, learn, and play program, nine holes. There's a league here on Thursdays through the Spark League. And we'd love to see you out here enjoying Cimarron and the Wild One.
Hey, Rick, always a lot of fun. Thank you so much. I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rick.
There he goes, Rick Shoemaker with Cimarron Golf, located on 210. I'm telling you, if you haven't played it yet, that's on you. Totally redone it. Okay, the course is spectacular. Greens rolling. Money has been put into this course. I know it had a reputation of kind of, right? Money has been put into it. Do yourself a favor. Go play Cimarron and let me know what you think. 641-1010 on the text line. Brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You will not be disappointed. Let's shift our attention to the National Football League draft. On the other side, Eric Edholm of NFL.com. Let's talk about the Jags. The draft is coming up Thursday night.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
All right, what a busy time. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Boxing, golf, two of the original six getting ready to drop the puck right now. My goodness, my boys in Boston up 1-0. Yeah, I told you I divorced them after their fallout a year ago. But it's in the blood against Toronto. Actually, a great night on tap. There are four games again on in the NHL playoffs. The NBA is underway. So, I mean, what more could you ask for? Oh, the NFL draft. Exactly. Let's bring in our buddy, Eric Edholm. Always a pleasure. He is with NFL.com, and he joins Rick Ballew. Eric, I know you're really busy, man. Appreciate a few moments.
Hey, for a fellow Bostonian, anything, my man.
Yeah, it's and you're even coming on now as the Bruins. Well, the good thing about it is I can tell you that they have the Canadian anthem and the national anthem. So
right.
Come on, that's going to take 7 or 8 minutes. By the time we hang up, you're not going to miss any time at all.
I'll be moved to tears. We'll have like emotional, you know, movements within it. Right. Yep. I'm out here watching my kids soccer right now. So I've got the game case right this minute. Yeah.
Hey, everything's on the Jags and what they're going to do at 17, but I kind of want to get to the chase. They need to have a solid draft. 48 pick overall, second round, third, fourth round picks. I mean, there were misses last year, and the guys they missed on, I'm not saying that they can't respond and play better this year in year two, but they didn't get it done in year one. So how important is it for Trent Baalke to hit on a few of these guys and they immediately pay off dividends this year?
Yeah, it does feel like it's changed a little bit. You know, there was a humbling turn of events last year, and this roster wasn't as impenetrable as some may have forecast. And so, yeah, that's what happens. And, you know, I think there are a few jobs open, right? There's spots that they've lost in free agency. You know, you could make a case for corner. You could make a case for interior offensive line. You could make a case for wide receiver. Pass rusher's got to always be on the mind, especially, you know, for Trent Baalke. He's always thought in that way, like the more the better, right?
So,
You know, there's, I guess that's what it boils down to is, you know, what players could be available at that first round pick at 17 or that fit that description and also, you know, aren't worth, you know, are worth, you know, paying up for if you end up moving up or taking it the 17th spot.
I thought Trent on Thursday, Trent Baalke was pretty forthcoming talking about, you know, needs, and you know how these general managers are. They really refuse to use that word outside of free agency. They want to say value as opposed to need. But, you know, around here, I think we believe it's going to be a corner. If not, it's going to be a wide receiver. And he was asked about it. If it really neck and neck, you go with the position that's more of a need. What about looking at it this way? I'm interested in your opinion. It feels like there's better wide receivers, bigger wide receivers as well, which, you know, obviously Lawrence had at Clemson, that'll be around at 48. There aren't as many corners highly regarded that'll be around at 48. How much of that comes into play? If both the guys are on your board at 17, you're like, yeah, but, you know, at 48, we feel better about getting a wide receiver there as opposed to getting a corner there.
These are the situations that I think GMs lose sleep over. You know what I mean? Like, these are the ones that keep them up at night. They play these little games with themselves and also with the rest of their staff. You know, they're essentially wargaming, right? Like, we have to expect the worst-case scenario, and we have to look two- and three-dimensionally at the draft. We can't just say strict BPA, you know, that's the way we go no matter what, because, of course, you have to think about your next move, right? It's chess. Right. You don't just move a piece and hope everything goes well. So, yeah, I think you look at the depth of each position. At corner, I think sort of day two depth, but it's a lot of nickel guys and sort of specialized players a little bit more. Whereas wide receiver, I think you have a little bit more in the buffet table. Like, you have more options there, and there are some speed options. You know, I could see a guy like Keon Coleman being a great fit, but if you're looking for something in between, there's a Malachi Corley, you know, so I do feel like there are, you know, is it going to be tough if Brian Thomas from LSU is on the board at 17 to make that call and say, no, we'll punt on receiver and take a corner? Yeah, that's a tough call, I think.
Eric Edholm, our guest, he's with NFL.com, joining us here as we go into the night with Rick Ballew. Another Bostonian, Albert Breer, today came out and said that there have been some teams that have flagged Brian Thomas Jr. because of a shoulder. Now, apparently it's a minor issue, but hey, you know, if you have a reputation as a guy, not necessarily a reputation as a guy who's been injured, but if you're coming in slightly with damaged goods, that could change some thinking as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, sometimes these things are, you know, one team sort of leaking this information. Sometimes they do it in a way of hoping that player drops them. And I've said to this point, if take health out of the equation for a quick moment, I think Thomas is closer to the top three of Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze than he is to the next year. I mean, I don't quite put him on that level, but I like him a lot. And so, you know, the health thing is obviously going to be a little bit of a
cloudy picture for certain teams, the more conservative medical teams out there. But I also think I would be surprised. We'll say, I don't know, but I would be surprised if he gets out of the teams. I think he's off the board by two.
All right, leave us with this. Because it could have five quarterbacks go, and it's going to be an offensive, very rich draft. I mean, what, yeah. 9 out of 10? You could have 10 out of 12. Not a lot of defensive guys are going to go. If the top who is your top corner in this year's draft class?
I've got Mitchell a shade ahead of Terry and Arnold right now.
Okay.
And I think just his length is going to be really enticing. You know, it's not that Terry and Arnold, he ran a nice time. You always worry about with corners below 6 foot. That's always sort of the cutoff. If you're shorter and you lose a step, you're in trouble, right? Length can help you out, extend your career a little bit. Guys like Aqib Talib or whatever. And yeah, that's what kind of gives me the slightest edge. Obviously, level of competition. SEC is better than the MAC, but when Mitchell went down to the Senior Bowl and he had big matchups in college, he stepped up. He looked the part, so I'm not scared about that at all. I would put him just a hair above Arnold, who's been a little more inconsistent and has some more development.
Hey, Eric, get back to watching your son play some soccer. Appreciate it as always, and I know we'll catch up here down the road.
Looking forward to it, man. See ya.
There he goes, Eric Edholm. Good stuff. NFL.com. So. We shall see. You know, I don't think Jacksonville's going to make a trade. Let me rephrase that. I wouldn't be surprised at all if at number 17, Trent Baalke trades down, if he can add a pick. If there's still some guys on the board that they love and there's not a dramatic difference between the guys who've gone off the board and what you have at 17, say, and without looking at the draft order, having it in front of me, if you can move down to 19, 20, 21, somewhere in that realm, if you will, and acquire some capital, that wouldn't surprise me. What would surprise me is if they give up a lot to get a T. Higgins or to get a Brandon Ayuk. But I just think you have to at least consider Higgins is a big wide receiver, and he played with Trevor at Clemson. Jacksonville needs a big wide receiver. Ayuk is not a big wide receiver, and he's not overly fast. He ran a 4.5, although it feels like his game speed is better than what he tested. John Lynch said today, no conversations about moving him. However, John Lynch, San Francisco, there is... And I know Trent was there. It feels like there's still some sort of a relationship there. I don't know if because of the Eric Armstead deal, I would doubt that there's any negativity there. Apparently he felt offended by the offer, and we heard Armstead said that he was really considering going and playing for the Texans until Jacksonville swooped in there and found a way to make that deal. So I think phone calls are made. That's what I'm trying to say. To both San Francisco and Cincinnati, I do. But it's also going to cost an incredible amount of money to sign that type of wide receiver. And Jacksonville has the ability to maneuver here. They can still restructure Christian Kirk. They can still restructure Cam Robinson. I mean, right now, those are the two highest cap numbers for the 2024 season. Right now, Christian Kirk has a cap number of $24,236,000. That's too much. He proved that he's the number one. He did. It was proven how much he was missed when he was out. You'd agree with that, right? Cam Robinson, $21.9 million. He missed 8 games. 4 he got popped for PEDs. 4 he was out and he was injured. You know, I've been pretty outspoken about this. I would have said goodbye to him a very long time ago. It appears that's not the case. But does it make sense to create more money? And I think you would have to if you were to make a deal and get Ayuk, you're going to have to sign him, or make a deal and get Higgins, and you would have to re-sign him too. And you're talking major, major dollars. Hey, Josh Allen got done. You know, I'm surprised by all this Trevor talk that an extension – is feeling as though now it's going to get done. I've given you my opinion on that. I wouldn't do it. But we'll see. JJ, is this all wishful thinking for Jag fans? You feel even the slightest bit confident that Trent Baalke tries to make a deal for either T. Higgins or for Brandon Ayuk? And if so, is there one that you would rather have than the other?
I don't think either one's going to happen just based on betting odds. Like, the Jags are way back there in the Ayuk and Higgins sweepstakes. But I would much rather have Higgins. I think that he's, you know, proven himself for a long time in this league. He has that relationship with Trevor. Yeah, I'd probably go him, although I would like to have either one. But, yeah, I would go Higgins over Ayuk.
Higgins is legit. I'm pulling it up right now. I want to say he's 6'4". Let me get to, let's see, T. Higgins. He is 6'4", 219. I mean, he's a 25-year-old, just turned 25 in January. Played 16 games, 14 games, 16 games 2 years ago during a 17-game season. Played 12 games last year during a 17-game season. So he's missed a little bit of time, right? 67, 74, 74, down to 42 receptions a year ago. Feels like his best football's ahead of him. He's got a really good quarterback. And something that has really aided T. Higgins is the fact that you've got an outstanding wide receiver on the other side of the field. That absolutely comes into play when you talk about Ja'Marr Chase. And when it comes to running the football, you know, Joe Mixon, who's now gone, right, he took that deal and went off to Houston. They've had success running the football as well. So it's a solid offense, as we know. The problem in Cincinnati has been that offensive line. Even going back to their Super Bowl year, I mean, wasn't it a record set for Joe Burrow for the amount of times that he was actually sacked, even though they went all the way to the Super Bowl? All right, thank you to Eric Edholm. Do appreciate that. If you want to comment, please do, 641-1010. Let me say this to you. We've got a packed week. Aaron Beasley is going to come in and join us here in studio. We're solidifying that time. It's either going to be Wednesday and or Thursday. We have other guests scheduled the rest of the week. It's never not a good time, okay? Or maybe I should say it is always a great time to send us your draft questions. All right? Anything that you are thinking, whether what you've heard us speak on or something that you are very intrigued about or you just have a simple question about. All right, 641-1010 on the text line. We're very interactive with our listeners. That's brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter. That is Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
To the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It should have happened 10, 12, 15 years ago, but finally, Foreigner inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I wasn't watching it, but apparently the announcement was made last night by Ryan Seacrest, and Seacrest in rock and roll. I mean, Ryan Seacrest, as far as his rock taste, I bet is like Matchbox 20, the Goo Goo Dolls. That's everything that's wrong.
Train.
With the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ryan Seacrest. But Ozzy got put in. He had been in with Black Sabbath. He gets in now as a solo artist, which is well-deserving. Peter Frampton got in posthumously for musical excellence category is Jimmy Buffett. They haven't even put Buffett in regularly, okay? And the rest is just a joke. I mean, Cher's in, and what I actually did they put Kool and the Gang in? Kind of like them a little bit, but they're not rock and roll. So it is. It's a sham. But at least it happened for Foreigner. I had Foreigner on my list at number three that I thought like should be in.
Best that aren't in.
Yes.
Yet.
For me, that still remains Bad Company. I mean, Paul Rogers is one of the greatest frontmen of all time. He was there with Free. He was there with Bad Company. Remember when he got up with Jimmy Page and The Firm? And then he was traveling with Queen. Love Paul Rogers. So Bad Company would be one for me. The Jake Isles Band was a totally different style of music, a Boston band, but I would put them in. Styx out of Chicago. I mean, come on. Classic rock, Styx. Gotta be in. Warren Zevon needs to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Boston, with their self-titled Boston, there wasn't a bad song on that album, right? The problem with them is they didn't write enough. Jethro Tull, for crying out loud, the man played a flute. How could you not put Jethro Tull in? His sound was different than like, well, why would you put Jethro Tull in when you can put Mary J. Blige in? You can put Cher in. Great artists. They're not rock and roll artists. America, I would put in. And, I'm partial to others. Some of that Canadian rock, Grand Funk Railroad, the Guess Who, and several others. But at least three got in that I'm happy about. Foreigner, Ozzy, and Peter Frampton. I still don't know what they did here with the Jimmy Buffett thing. Come on. Buffett should be in. Boston just scored 1-0. The Bruins up over the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were showing pregame and, fighting. As I speak, Toronto has tied it at one apiece. Was that Matthews who scored 69 regular season goals? But anyway, they were showing crossing the line a little bit with Maroon and Reeves kind of elbowing one another, kind of getting into it a little bit. Of course, Maroon won consecutive cups for the Tampa Bay Lightning going back a few years ago. And, we'll see if they get any ice time, how much ice time, in fact, they do get, and if possibly there is going to be a throwdown here. That typically doesn't happen in tight games in the playoffs. The only time you really see skirmishes in the National Hockey League playoffs, unless it's early in the first period, is if one team has a decidable lead, then you try to fire up the club by throwing hands. So we'll see if that, in fact, does happen. Hey, did you notice, did you see the story with Jaden Rashada now visiting Georgia?
Wow. No, I saw that he is hitting the portal, which, shocking.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who basically told every school, him and who's the cornerback from Colorado?
Oh, Hunter.
No, the one that's in the portal.
Five-star, yeah.
He basically, was going to Florida, and then he was going to Miami. But it's those two guys are absolutely hilarious. I'm assuming Rashada didn't make the $20 million or whatever that he was rumored to for the reason him not going to Florida.
I know, the money he got paid, man.
He should retire.
Just go find an island. Right? And sip drinks that have umbrellas in them. And I mean, but yeah, he went to Arizona State, got hurt, left. Now, but this is vicious. All right. It's tough enough to have the ETN deal. And we saw ETN's comments, Trevor's younger brother, Trevor, who had a decent career at Florida. They had, obviously a great 1-2 punch, two really good backs at the University of Florida, but he made the comments of, could I, be a backup at Florida or go play for a national championship contender at Georgia? Just, even if this guy never took a snap at Georgia, if Jaden Rashada announced that he was playing for the Dogs, so the Dogs announced that they were bringing him in, Can you imagine the animosity there? He's visiting the Dogs this week. Doesn't mean that it's going to happen. And even though it's a transfer portal guy, this is different from the world of college football recruiting, where you have all your visits and you have the amount, you have a certain amount that you're allowed to bring in and that you can announce with your class. I would be under the impression that if Rashada is visiting Georgia, then they are offering, but I don't know that that is the case. So certainly not going to come into play this year with Carson Beck. And obviously for Georgia fans and college football fans around here, well aware of the fact that Georgia recruits as any team, as well as any team in America. So I don't know, but I do find it pretty intriguing that that actually did happen a little bit earlier today, or it was announced a little bit earlier today. All right, tonight's show brought to you by Patriot Roofing Services, specializing in all types of commercial and residential roofing and repairs, gutters, sun tubes, skylights as well, 10-year workmanship warranty. Financing is available, military and senior citizen discounts, no subcontractors. So just give my buddy Mark Tozzolo a call. That's 982-4052. Whether you need a brand new roof for your home, your business, or repairs to your current roof, just check them out online. Go to Patriot Roofing Services. All right, when we come back, got a couple of other nuggets I do want to bring up, a couple of baseball-related issues. Want to get back to some football as well and kind of compare and contrast. If you don't know what I'm talking about, good. I'll share that with you on the other side. Great to have you with us with JJ. My name's Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
We're good to the end? We are? Okay, we're good. We're good. I love it. Full systems ahead. More airtime, the better we are, right? Or the, at least for the, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know about how you feel with that. Aaron Boone got ejected today. First off, the Yankees lost 2-0 at home to the Athletics. And it's incredible. He was ejected 5 pitches into the game by the home plate umpire, who's the son of the great, I believe he's the son of the great Henry Wendelstadt. He gave him the thumb, and Boone's like, I didn't even say anything. It's someone above me in the crowd. And the umpire was like, I don't care, you're gone. So, I mean, I'll be honest.
Can they review that?
I'll be honest. I love it because it happened to the evil empire. But, I mean, this is absolutely absurd that someone in the stands can make a comment that early in a game and you throw the manager out because of it. So are teams now responsible for what is said coming from the stands? I'm trying to think if I remember. I feel like something like this has happened before in the NBA with, like, floor tickets, right?
Oh, guys get kicked out all the time. Like, yeah. The new thing in the NBA is for players to get butthurt about anything that someone sitting close by says, and they get them kicked out.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen countless times over the last 2 years, and before that, I never saw it happen once in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But this was weird because it was like a day game. I guess it was a makeup. I don't even know. But no one's there. It's the first inning. It's literally 5 pitches into the game. And Boone is bitching about something, you know, balls and strike or something. You can hear the entire exchange. We will play it, but we're not allowed to say some of the things they say. I highly recommend you go watch it, though.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining.
He basically tells Boone to shut up. I'm not taking anything more. Just shut up, don't say anything, or I'll throw you out. Literally, like, 3 seconds later, a guy sitting behind the dugout says something. He tosses him out of the game, and Boone acts like the most innocent person ever would act. He looked like a child, almost, like, trying to explain to my mom, like, he did it, not me. And it didn't save him.
2-0 final. The A's were an enormous underdog. New York was minus 250. The total was 8.5. Ended up being 2-0 in a quick game, 2 hours and 32 minutes. They announced 30,366, but I think you're on to something. You can hear more with less fans. I mean, typically when a place is packed, you drown one another out. That was not the case today. Hey, one other thing baseball related. I like to follow young studs as they make their trip up. This situation now with Jackson Holiday, I want to say he's one for his first 33. Now, he was the number one prospect in baseball, Matt Holliday's son. We'll see if he's in the lineup tonight, but he's hitting 0.33.
Yes, he has one hit.
Is it 33? It must be it. 0.3. He must be one for 33. Yeah.
And they were begging to bring this guy up, you know. And luckily for them, they're stacked. It's not like they're relying on this guy for their lineup. They have a million bats in that lineup.
I remember reading this. I mean, this was, man, decades ago when I was growing up. I don't even know if I was a teenager yet. But it was either Willie Mays or Hank Aaron. It was one of the two, okay? The greatest players of that era, along with Mickey Mantle, right? That era. Mays, Aaron, Mantle, and then a smidge behind would be Frank Robinson and Roberto Clemente. Those are the best position players of that era. But it was, I want to say it was like Willie Mays who began his career like 0 for 27. I don't know if you can find that. It may be difficult, too. But I do know it was one of those two players because I remember it as if it was yesterday, I don't know, not 40-some-odd years ago when I actually did read it. So hopefully they'll give him some time, but he's got all the pressure on the world. He is a legitimate five-tool player. He was going to go to Oklahoma State, but he was the top overall pick, and you know he's in the show right now at this age. This is all right. So for Scottie Scheffler now, $16 million in winning over the last 44 days. First at Bay Hill, first of the players, second at the Texas Children's, Houston Open when he missed the 5-foot putt, first at the Masters, and then first in Hilton Head. Also for Scottie Scheffler, okay, his lead in the world rankings now over number two Rory McIlroy is actually bigger than McIlroy's lead over Tiger Woods, who's 784th. Let me say that again. The dominance for Scottie Scheffler is so significant, the difference between one and two is more than two and 784. Absolutely blows you away if you consider those particular numbers with what Scheffler has been able to do. And how about his caddy now? His caddy in these last 44 days has made $1,780,000 in 44 days. The 5-7-10 rule, for those of you who don't know what that is, caddies get 5% if you make the cut, right? They get 7% of the 5% of the earnings if you make the cut, 7% of the earnings if you finish in the top 10, and then you get 10% of the earnings if you go out and actually do win the tournament, and obviously Scottie Scheffler has been able to do that. One other note in the world of golf. Tiger Woods' year in 2000 was one of the greatest ever, right? And I was lucky enough to be able to cover him out in California at Pebble Beach, where he walked away from everyone and won that year's United States Open. It was my first year in Chicago when I actually was able to go out and cover that. And it was just amazing. To put things into perspective 24 years later, if you look at what Tiger Woods did, and I think he had 7 wins in the year 2000, he made $10,703,000. If you push that forward to today's payout, remember that it was $20 million yesterday at Hilton. Actually, $20 million wrapped up earlier this morning, which is another really weird dilemma that the PGA Tour found themselves in. How can they not be smart enough to read the weather? Now, I understand it's right on the ocean, so maybe they felt that winds could change things a little bit. But if they pushed up the tee times on Sunday, they would have been able to finish the match, and they wouldn't have been able to finish the event, and they didn't. They held on to their normal starting times, and you know, you had the big delay, Scheffler after 11. He came back and finished up 12, 13, 14, and 15. So I had to get up this morning and play 3 more holes. But you would just think that someone would be a little bit smarter than that and say, let's move up the tee times. The only reason why I could think that maybe they did not is advertising on it, right? Oh, no, with these guys are paying, you know, top guys and gals are paying top dollar. We can't move it up. You know, it's got to be in the time frame of CBS. Well, you think they were watching at 8 o'clock this morning on Golf Channel? Because that's how it wrapped up. Anyway, back to Tiger. He earned $10,703,000. In today's earnings for Tiger, it would have been $92,333,000. So, just wanted to throw that out there for you. We have got 10 seconds remaining. Boston just scored with 7 seconds to go. You've got to be kidding me. David Pastrnak on the power play. Boston goes up 2-1. 7.8 seconds remaining to the original six, man. It is a great time of year. Hockey playoffs are second to none. I know, JJ, you've been enthralled, I guess, early on with the NBA playoffs, but I'm always going to take the NHL over I'm just laughing at these stats over the NHL, over the NBA. Here's a guy, 38-23, who says Ryan Seacrest had a poster of Dennis DeYoung dressed as Mr. Roboto in his room when he was growing up. I love Dennis DeYoung. I wish he didn't leave Sticks. Whenever Dennis DeYoung rolls through Jacksonville, we have him on our radio show. Fun stuff. But yeah, the Mr. Roboto part was probably the worst of it. In my opinion, Judas Priest should be in the Hall of Fame. I agree. 0976. I've seen them a few times. I think the last time I saw Judas Priest, they opened up for Deep Purple. And it was at Daly's Place. More people were there for Judas Priest than Deep Purple. And I understand Deep Purple goes back. You know, they were primarily a band in the 70s into the mid 80s, but Deep Purple absolutely is a Hall of Famer, and that is not the case when it comes to Judas Priest. Hey, Baloo, from the 45-17, look up Nelly Korda, female professional golfer, 5 straight wins, the age of 25, one of 3 or 4 ladies who have done this, going back to the days of Nancy Lopez and Annika. Not, just putting that out there, not sure that you knew, yada, yada. Yeah, I am aware of it. I watched her jump in the lake yesterday. Yeah, I mean, she's spectacular. Mm-hmm. She's doing exactly what Scottie Scheffler is doing. Not getting the attention. We just talked about the whole Caitlin Clark deal, right? The numbers that she brought dwarfed the Masters, dwarfed everything. I don't know if the LPGA Tour is getting that. I don't believe they are. Have you seen the attack by Antonio Brown on Caitlin Clark? Have you seen any of that stuff on Twitter?
No.
It's vicious. I mean, it's to the point where I wouldn't even touch it as far as the commentary. But man, why and where is that? I just have to believe that they don't roll in the same spectrum, that they've never met one another. Why the commentary by him on her is amazing to me. But again, it's not for this show. Here's another one who said, yada, 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 yada. It wasn't even on TV yesterday. The LPGA Tour is not on TV? I guess it's not. I've never really given it all that much thought, right? I love the Golf Channel, and if I'm not playing golf myself or going to the beach, I'll watch them warm up. And listen, I love the individual channels. All right, NHL Network on channel 215 on DirecTV is my favorite. I love MLB.com or MLB at night, certainly with First Pitch. And I find myself on the Golf Channel, 218 all the time. You know, the NFL Network is not as good as it once was. It's like everything else in life. It's just kind of waned. I don't know what it is. I feel like the NFL Network is a little bit trying to turn into ESPN and SportsCenter, where everything has got to be comical, if you will, as opposed to just delivering the stories. But anyway, I wasn't aware. I'm not going to try to lie to you. I don't spend a lot of time following that particular sport. But There you have it. All right. Tomorrow, we have got a lot planned during our Wednesday program, much more on the NFL draft. And again, got a lot of comments. Didn't really get an opportunity to get to many of them during tonight's program. We were just real busy with guests. But keep throwing them at us. I don't get to them now that the show is over. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm always available on text, or excuse me, on Twitter. That is Blue1010XL. Thank you to Rick Shoemaker for joining us from Cimarron Golf Club. Also, Eric Edholm of NFL.com. Much more on the NFL draft tomorrow night and the rest of the week as well. Hackers coming up. Thank you to JJ LaSalva. I'm Rick Blue. We'll talk Tuesday at 6:00.